Hi, and welcome to my 7 short game secrets for you today. I hope I'm finding you well. We all know that the DNA of the long game has the ability to be a little unstable at times, almost hormonal in its nature. Well, if you don't know that, well, you soon will. It's easy to fathom out when you consider how fast the club is swinging around the body and the distance it has to travel in comparison to something like the putter. So today I'm going to talk with you and mentor you through my 7 short game secrets. When your long game is playing the ball and potentially your round could be spiralling out of control. These short game secrets can suppress a higher score than normal. These short game keys can turn a 78 into a 74, a 90 into an 86, or a 75 into a 71. I also promise you that these short game secrets will allow you to trap and capitalize on days when your long game is really firing on all cylinders and providing you with opportunity after opportunity. You see, such is the importance of your scoring ability, not your hitting ability, but your scoring ability, that it can not only put out potential fires during your round, but it can also ignite your talent when you have flow and control. It's that important, so come on. Give me about 13 or 14 minutes of your undivided attention and let me reveal some techniques and strategies that without question can save or make your round today, tomorrow or next year. What I tell you here doesn't change. You just grow and get better at them, okay? Right, so let's begin. Number 1, putting. Let's start with a question. Okay, let's say I wanted to travel from Miami to New York. It doesn't matter how, plane, train, automobile, by foot. But wouldn't it be pretty helpful to know that we first start this journey in Florida and then pass through Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, onto Virginia, etc. You get the idea, yeah? How would you monitor your progress to the ultimate destination otherwise? Time distance travel isn't available yet, so there's a journey. A journey that has to be followed en route to the final destination, just like the putt of yours. Even the golf club where you might be travelling to today, your end destination is in mind, but to get there, you have to pass through town X, Y, and Z, with obviously the possible diversion to Starbucks factored in, but anyway, you get the idea. One more thing, have you ever noticed how getting to the general destination or proximity is actually pretty easy? But finding that specific street or house is actually the most vital and detailed part of the journey. So without question, the most important part of any quest, and your quest today is to hold putts, can be found when you dock, meet, arrive, find, or locate your target. Anyone can hit the ball in the general direction of the cup, even my Auntie Linda, but will the cup and the ball find each other? Well, the answer is no, because this is in no way specific enough to be consistent all the time. There is no formula. So your first short game secret today is to gain your first read from behind the cup. I'll say it again, your first read from behind the cup. Repeat after me, your first read from behind the cup. Right. Because we have to start with the end in mind. Look at the last 3 foot of the putt from behind the hole. What's happening? Where's the ball going to fall in from? If it's a straight putt, you can see that the ball is going to enter at 6 o'clock, yeah? Another time, you may stand behind the hole and see plenty of break in it from the right. So hitting the ball with less pace, it would probably fall in at 8 or 9 o'clock. Hit it with a firmer pace, and it will probably enter the cup at 7 o'clock, you see? If you read the putt from the ball to the hole, you are essentially reading the putt backwards in Japanese. You can't unlock the code. However, when you first read the putt from behind the hole, back to the ball, destination to starting point, you reveal the most important aspect of the putt. The end reveals the whole putt and where the ball will ultimately fall into in relation to its speed. Now you can truly plan the journey of the ball from its origin to its destination and the time it will take to get there. Obtain your first read from behind the hole, ladies and gentlemen, and it will tell you the story of your putt. Okay, short game secret number 2. Do not use your lob wedge from the fairway or around the green any more than you have to. I remember having a conversation with Irish Ryder Cup star Paul McGinley many moons ago, when he told me that if he used his 60-degree lob wedge twice around, then this was a lot. Now, my avid listeners, why is this? Why am I advocating this mindset against what seems to be a very popular club? Reason number one for you not to get addicted to your lob wedge is versatility, guys. Initially, I want you to become the master of one club, a maximum of two, around the greens, not a jack of all. Do you want to have to develop four different feels for your four different wedges, each housing a multitude of different shots for each one? That's like 16 different feels for all of your wedges around the greens. Can you now see less is more? How simplicity gloriously reigns over too much thought. Listen, I'm going to say that the wedge you should be most familiar with, like it's an extra hand, should be your 56th degree. This club has the ability, rather like the forward in the long game, to hit almost any shot around the green. Severiano Ballesteros, God bless him, unanimously thought upon as the best wedge player we have ever seen, followed, like many in the early 1980s, Tom Kite's concept of putting three, or in Tom's case, four wedges in his bag. Within months, Sevi ditched this philosophy and went back to his pitching wedge and 56-degree sand iron. His reason? He lost his versatility. A lob wedge is a one-dimensional golf club because of its design characteristics. It's got too much loft on it to be anything else. It's an angled piece of metal that hits the ball high and soft most all of the time. I see pros and amateurs trying to hit the ball low around the greens and the fairway with their lob wedge. The only way you can do this is to either play the ball back in your stance or shove the handle forwards of the club head itself. Both actions introduce the very sharp leading edge into the turf and not the friendly bounce on the sole. This strains the design of the club completely. It's designed to glide, guys, not dig. If you want to hit it lower, then change to a club that hits it lower. It's not rocket science, is it? My second piece of advice in regard to lob wedges is this. The more height you generate in a shot, the more spin variables you will introduce and incur. You actually forsake energy going forwards at the target for additional energy placed into the upward lift. The price? Accuracy. Your ball dispersion will suffer. Look at it this way. All you're doing with your lob wedge, with that much loft, is creating a glancing blow. No, you're right, I can hear you. You're not wiping across it like in a slice, but with that much loft, you're wiping under it. Energy forwards, guys, to the target, not excessively up into the heavens. Okay, your third reason to put the lob wedge away concerns your touch and feel. I remember Nick Faldo talking about his preparation for playing at Augusta National. Nick used to find Augusta's fastest putt on the practice green and on the golf course and then deliberately try and leave that putt short. You see, Nick, like many other great short game exponents, realized that developing your short game is all about conditioning. You create and practice more extreme scenarios than you will face on the actual golf course. And then pretty much everything you will look at will look benign to you. Training and using a lob wedge all the time basically makes you a baby. In exactly the opposite way, Faldo practicing his putting at Augusta. Practice all short game shots that need great touch with your lesser lofted wedges. I'm going to use an extreme example here, but it's really going to press it home to you. Imagine practicing all of your bunker shots with a 6-iron. You'd be able to do it, but it would be pretty tough, wouldn't it? Then some nice chap walks along into the picture and says, "Hey, why don't you use this?" And he hands you a 56-degree sand iron. This club would seem like a dream. It would be so easy. It would seem like child's play, gaining touch and feel, hitting great shots with the 56 in comparison to the 6-iron. Your confidence will be amazing. So don't practice touch with the lofted clubs. You will dilute your feel to absolutely nothing, I promise you. Train in less than desirable conditions and with less lofted clubs. You will condition yourself to far better touch and far better feel. Short game secret number three, chipping. And I'm going to be quick with this, so listen. I'm going to give you a whole new way of visualizing the different lies you encounter around the greens and the different energy forms you give these individual cases. Okay, listen, lie number one is a contact lie. It's sitting up on a bed of grass. It looks inviting. In fact, this lie looks too good. until you treat it like a regular chip, hit down on it, expecting that pinch between the club and the turf. You then hit it high in the face, and the ball flops down out in front of you like a cannonball, not happy. Lie number two. This is a non-contact shot. There is a tuft of grass just behind the ball, preventing the club head from ever making contact, although you can still see the ball. Lie number three is non-contact again, but the ball is virtually in a bird's nest. You can't even see the darn thing. It's down there somewhere, but you can't see it. Now, the formula that you're going to use for these commonly found lies can actually be found in a drum kit. You see, there are a great number of similarities between acoustics, sounds, and the different types of energy needed to play these shots successfully. Let's take lie number one. It's sitting up. But upon further examination, you see that there's actually very little volume of grass under the ball. It's flaky, but it's perched on top. Bermuda is a classic for this suspect lie. We can't compress the ball into anything, so we're going to have to brush the ball from its fragile bed. Now, this would be like stroking a string of chimes. So choose a straighter face, less lofted club, and then stroke or brush the ball from the top of the grass. It's a long, shallow, constant energy with no real pulse or strike or hit to it. It's a long, level strike. Lie number two, the non-contact nestler. Let's face it, you're not going to be hitting the ball, and you will encounter tough resistance from the grass that it's embedded in. Use the energy I referred to in lie number one, and the club will no question get snagged up in the grass. So which kind of drum or which kind of energy profile will we have to use for this one? This is a lie in which you virtually have to stun and scare the ball out. The energy we need is found in a hi-hat cymbal. Bang, bang. Club in, out. And it's quick. It's a high-energy pop. Do me a favour. Go and look up Bruce Lee's one-inch punch on YouTube and you'll really see what I mean. You've got to open up the face, bang, bang. And yes, you will be surprised with practice at the spin you can generate from this non-contact lie. Lastly, the buried lie. This lie is like a bass drum. The energy is powerful and it's long-lasting. It resonates. You open up the club face, swing back, and then plant or dump the club head right in there behind the ball. Boom! It goes on. Don't worry if the club head doesn't exit the grass. It's meant to stay there, just like the energy that's been delivered. So open up the face, swing back, and then smack the bounce of the club right into the grass behind the ball. Boom! Long-lasting, powerful energy. So there you go, three different lies, three different energy profiles, and very effective results. So come on, Ringo, bang those drums. Short game secret number four has actually two great keys for you. One is specifically aligned at your bunker play today, and the other can be used for any shot around the green. But it's particularly helpful from the trap. Look, it's unlikely, even in the same month, that you will face a bunker shot with exactly the same lie characteristics, sand conditions, green complexes, and pin positions. You know, each shot is varied. It's a new situation. You must have a fresh pair of eyes for each bunker shot. We are often fooled by the fact that a bunker is a hazard, and we must go into it with reverence and treat it with too much respect because, you know, we're not allowed to touch it until, well, we touch it. Not true. We can totally assimilate what we need from the shot outside the trap. Rule number one is to examine your lie and get an idea what the club head has to do through the sand for the ball to produce the shot you want. This is best done when your imagination kicks in and you imagine that you're looking through the sand like an X-ray or Superman. Great bunker players not only see the entry point of the club, but they also see it journey through the sand. So, what if it's wet sand? Well, then you're going to have to pull out your 56 degree and create a steeper action. It, you know, the sand is compact, it's going to be heavier. What happens if it's sat up on a plinth, almost a T-peg? Your technique will need to widen and shallow, producing a more U-shaped action. For both of these lies, rehearse what you need outside the trap in the grass. The grass will offer almost the same amount of resistance as the sand would do anyway. So today, if you have to sweep the ball from that plinth of fluffy sand and you need that shallow strike, then rehearse this by brushing and barely touching the surface of the grass as you make your swing. Brush the end tips. However, wetter sand or even a plug lie, you're going to need to rehearse a steeper intention. You know, make swings that challenge the roots of the grass, so in essence, you are making a more downward aggressive rehearsal. Visualize what you want the club to do through the sand today. Use the grass and the roots to gain this feeling in hindsight. Lastly, in my new book, I talk about what I call the two bounce rule. Generally, this phenomenon happens 9 times out of 10. Your golf ball, whether hit from a chip, a pitch, a bunker shot, or whatever, will take 2 primary bigger bounces before it settles and either runs out or checks up. Watch for this the next time you practice, or better still, put this visual cue into place right now, today. 2 primary bounces and then it will run or check. It's the two bounce rule here, folks. Short game key number 5 is about your long putting. Any long putt you have today will challenge your ability to work out the distance, pace, equation, especially if there are breaks and slopes involved. So these are your turnkey actions I want you to take in order to give yourself the very best chance of leaving it stone dead by the hole. Long putt key number 1 is to gain a sense of the distance involved. You can do this several ways. You can walk from the cup back to the ball, pacing the distance in yard steps. And it's amazing how much more enlightened your instincts become to the distance the ball has to cover. Secondly, take a panoramic view of the putt and see it from its length perspective, as opposed to the line perspective of either behind the cup or behind the hole. Why? Because you can only tell how long the barrel is when you turn the gun sideways. Lastly, when you are making your practice putt rehearsals, count in seconds how long you think the ball will take to travel to the hole. Do this while looking out at the line of the putt and see it tracking to the hole in real time. You see, it's not only the distance we can get a feel for here, it's also the time you believe it will take to get there. Factor in the fourth dimension, guys, time. Stroke-wise, 2 aspects need to be calibrated together in order for your feel to sync up and dial into what you are seeing. Number 1, house or encase your stroke into a constant rhythm or cadence. This is the constant lifeblood of your putting stroke. Look, your path and club face may go astray from time to time, as it does with everybody's, but the most controllable aspect of your stroke is your rhythm. Secondly, if your rhythm is at a constant, you can fit the length of your stroke within this constant. Great long putters have always had a superb rhythm, so start from this point, guys. Get good at these long game keys and then get great at them. Short game secret number 5 is discipline. Discipline with your mind and discipline with your body. You know, every shot you hit, every shot you have ever hit and will hit, will be indelibly stored within your consciousness. This comes to explain how certain swing patterns, good and bad, are learnt and repeated. Your memory simply recalls the image, the feeling, or the instruction of a previous experience. Reason number 1 for keeping the head quiet today in the moments after a short shot has been struck is to do with what I call interfering eyes. As you look up and allow your eyes to lock onto the ball, you have lost any chance to capture and thus recall the feeling of that shot ever again. It simply won't resonate within your memory because your visual sense has blocked your kinesthetic intelligent pathways to the brain. Your ability to build what I call layers onto your feelings has been lost the moment you look up. However, in denying the eyes their early look or peek at the result, your subconscious mind is now recruited to examine the exact sensation that just occurred. This is the way to learn the short game via your kinesthetic intelligence and memory. So today, here's what I want you to do for any short shot. Take a good look at the shot ahead of you, picking your target and deciding on the intention. As you make your practice strokes, keep your head down for the count of two as you reach your finish position. Or indeed, close your eyes as you make your rehearsals. Either will do, because you will immediately start to understand what I'm really talking about. Or should I say, your body will start to understand. The beauty of this will be that for the first time, you are genuinely able to ask yourself about the quality of your practice strokes and rehearsal. How did it feel? Could I use a little more or less action, etc., etc.? Take the eyes out and put the feelings into your rehearsals and the real shot ahead. Every shot in the short game is a chance to grow layers onto your feel ability. Just take away those prying and interfering eyes. Okay, short game secret number 7 is what I call reactional rhythm. The greatest exponent of this in the modern times, Tiger Woods. In recent tests, we have come to learn that it is the rhythm and the flow of the eyes in relation to a target that creates the best chance of being spontaneous, accurate, and athletic in a sporting endeavour. For example, in the dreaded case of the yips, we know that the brain will freeze because you're not giving it clear instructions, and then the eyes will consequently stop moving and go into a gazy stare mirroring the brain, because both of them have no idea what target to look at or what part of the brain they should access. It's an organisational mess. When you look at Tiger Woods, and actually many other great players before him, you can see them burn the target with their eyes for as long as they need. The time period of the burn varies from player to player, but nonetheless, there is a targeted intimacy going on. The trick is this, though. The moment they pull their eyes from the target, they will consciously or subconsciously count one. When their eyes meet the back of the ball, they will count two. Then the club head starts back, they will count one again. And then the club head strikes the ball, that's two. So it's like one, two, one, two. Okay, there's a visual rhythm, a dance if you will, that creates this flow and spontaneity with the target. You're staring at the ball, and then you start your count, one. Your eyes meet the back of the ball, that's two. The club head draws itself away, that's one again. And then you strike the ball, that's two. One, two, one, two. The count starts when you're ready to look away from the target, but only when you are ready. So there are your 7 short game secrets. They utilize the senses of the body, they call upon common sense, and they economize the technique that you will employ to use. In practicing them, you will only accelerate your progress and improvement. Do me a favor, if you will. Pick one of these 7 secrets the next time you play golf, one for each new round, and then continue to rotate these 7 through the year. Because for anyone between a handicap of 25 and 15, these are worth 7 shots to your score. For any professional or top amateur, one or more of these secrets will allow you to win a tournament. Oh yeah, one more thing. Which one will you choose today?